to the book of Isaiah. And as I trust you will recall, we have spent a good amount of time here in Isaiah. We're attempting to study through or look through the book of Isaiah in large sections. However, we're finding that that's a little more of a challenge because there's so much wonderful detail, and it is important for us to get the detail. I would like you to go back to Isaiah chapter 41. We want to remind ourselves about where we're looking at specifically. Look at chapter number 41 in the book of Isaiah. Chapter 41 in the book of Isaiah. And what we've been talking about the last 2 weeks, actually 3 weeks now, is that in this particular section of the book of Isaiah, chapter 41 through 47, Isaiah challenges the nation of Israel with regard to their worshiping of false gods and telling Israel that they're false gods. They have eyes, but they can't see. They have ears, but they can't hear. They've got hands, but they can't help them. And those gods have to be borne about. They have to be carried about, whereas God is the one who has carried Israel all along. So he really is challenging Israel with regard to their worshiping of the gods of the Gentiles. And one of the most important challenges that he gives here, if you look once again at Isaiah 41, you should have this passage marked and memorized by now. Look at verse 21. He says, "Produce your cause, saith the Lord. Bring forth your strong reasons, saith the King of Jacob. Let them bring them forth and show us what shall happen. Let them show the former things what they be, that we may consider them and know the latter end of them, or declare unto us things for to come." Show the things that are to come hereafter, that we may know that ye are gods. Yea, do good or do evil, that we may be dismayed and behold it together. What God does here, once again, we got a front row seat for you guys right there. So anyway, what God does here in this section of Isaiah is that the way we said it before, it's almost like he's challenging Israel and their false gods to a God contest. He's saying, okay, bring all your gods, and then I'll compete with your gods, and let's find out who the true and living God is. And by the way, how can you determine who the true and living God is? How does he say it? How does he prove himself? Yeah, but how? How does he do it? What's that? Yes, if you were to ask God, how would you prove your own self? How would you prove your own word? God says the way he does it is through declaring and bringing to pass future events. Declaring the future. Because after all, if he can declare the future, and how often would it have to come to pass in order for it to be? It has to be 100%, not 50%. None of this Gene Dixon type stuff or Nostradamus type stuff. It has to come to pass 100%. And as we mentioned in the past, that there are over 600 different individual prophecies in the Bible. Some say it's actually up to about 800 and so forth. But there are over 600 different individual specific, not general, but specific prophecies that the God of the Bible foretells. He predicts to come to pass. And does anybody know what percent of the prophecies that were supposed to have come to pass so far have come to pass? 100% is exactly right. And when you begin to study the details about the events that he predicts in the future, it is without question that Israel's God, the God of the Bible, is indeed the God of heaven and earth. So what he's doing in this section is that he's saying, okay, bring forth your cause, bring forth your gods, and let us have a God contest. Let us predict the future and let us see who can bring it to pass. All right? And so we've looked at that the last couple of weeks. I want to look at a very specific prophecy that, at least in this section, it's quite impressive, quite significant. And if you'll look with me over to chapter 44. Look over to chapter 44. Once again, in this section, there are a number of different themes that run through this section, but one of the things that's going to happen is that the God predicts that Israel is going to be carried off into captivity, and they're going to be preserved through that captivity, and then he's going to gather them back in redemption. He's going to forgive them of their sins. And you can see, for example, look at verse 21, 44:21. "Remember these, O Jacob and Israel, for thou art my servant. I have formed thee, thou art my servant, O Israel. Thou shalt not be forgotten of me. Israel's going to be cast off. They're going to be given into captivity and so forth. But God reminds them right there that He's not going to forget about them. I have, notice, blotted out as a thick cloud thy transgressions, and as a cloud thy sins. Return unto me, for I have redeemed thee. See the prophecy. He's going to forgive their sins. And because He's going to forgive their sins, He's going to invite them and call them back. Sing, O ye heavens, for the Lord hath done it. Shout, ye lower parts of the earth. Break forth into singing, ye mountains, O forest, and every tree therein. For the Lord hath redeemed Jacob and glorified Himself in Israel. Thus saith the Lord, thy Redeemer, and He that formed thee from the womb. I am the Lord that maketh all things, that stretcheth forth the heavens alone, that spreadeth abroad the earth by myself, that frustrateth the tokens of the liars and maketh diviners mad. That's the false lie system, the satanic rebellious system, that turneth wise men backward and maketh their knowledge foolish. Once again, you can see in the context here, God is setting Israel up for... He's predicting that they're going to go through that time of captivity and chastisement, but He's going to forgive their sins and He's going to invite them back. He's going to call them back and redeem them unto Himself. All right, now pick up with me, if you would, at verse 26. That confirmeth the word of his servant and performeth the counsel of his messengers, that saith to Jerusalem, thou shalt be inhabited. And to the cities of Judah, ye shall be built, and I will raise up the decayed places thereof. Now you've got to remember that at the time that God is saying this through Isaiah, does anybody know how Jerusalem is doing? They're doing fine. They have, when God is saying this through Isaiah, Israel has not been taken into captivity yet. It's still future. Even the northern kingdom has not been taken into captivity at this particular time. They're shortly taken into captivity after this, all right? But Israel's fine. Jerusalem's fine and so forth. They get taken into captivity after this event. The Assyrians come in and take the northern kingdom into captivity, and then later, a number of years later, the Babylonians come in and take the southern kingdom into captivity, all right? So at the time that Isaiah is prophesying this, Israel's not, they haven't been taken into captivity yet. And so when Isaiah's prophesying this, a lot of the Israelites are not even believing. They're saying, Isaiah, what are you talking about? You know, they have no idea. But God predicts that they're going to be taken into captivity. They're going to go through that chastening hand of the five cycles of chastisement in Leviticus 26. He's going to forgive them of their sins, and He's going to bring them back to Him, all right, and offer them forgiveness and redemption, that type of thing. But look at the next verse. That saith to the deep, be dry, and I will dry up thy rivers. That saith to Cyrus, he is my shepherd, and shall perform all my pleasure. Even saying to Jerusalem, thou shalt be built, and to the temple thy foundation shall be laid. Thus saith the Lord to his anointed, to Cyrus, whose right hand I have holden, to subdue nations before me, and I will loose the loins of kings, to open before him the two-leaved gates. The gates shall not be shut. I will go before thee and make thy crooked places straight. I will break in pieces the gates of brass and cut in sunder the bars of iron. I will give thee the treasures of darkness and hidden riches of secret places, that thou mayest know that I, the Lord, which call thee by thy name, I am the God of Israel. For Jacob my servant's sake, and Israel mine elect, I have even called thee by thy name. I have surnamed thee, though thou hast not known thee. Now there's a lot of things going on in this section here. God in these verses identifies by name a person who isn't even alive at this time. A guy named Cyrus. You might know who Cyrus was? Isn't it interesting? Cyrus winds up being the king of Persia. Cyrus doesn't even come on the scene for about 200 years. God predicts in this passage that what He's going to do is He's going to raise up a man by the name of Cyrus. And Cyrus is going to give the command to actually rebuild the city. In fact, you see the statement there. Look back at 44 verse 28. Thus saith Cyrus, He is my shepherd, and shall perform all my pleasure, even saying to Jerusalem, Thou shalt be built, and to the temple thy foundation shall be laid. Once again, one of the reasons that this was so hard for Israel to believe, and hence they discounted Isaiah, is at the time Isaiah is saying this, Jerusalem is doing fine and the temple is already built. And so they're saying, Isaiah, what are you talking about? The fact that the statement says here, to Jerusalem thou shalt be built, implies what's going to happen to the city. It's going to be ransacked. And to the temple thy foundation shall be laid. What's going to happen to the temple? It's going to be what? It's going to be utterly destroyed. And of course, apostate Israel believed that it was impossible for their temple and their city to be destroyed because they said, God would never let this happen to us. And yet, the reason that this is going to happen is, of course, because they rebelled against God. All right? So, what we want to do this morning is we want to talk about Cyrus here and the significance of this prophecy. This is a prophecy that God gives, and it was at least 200 years before this guy ever did this. It was actually about 220 years or so forth, before this event actually occurs. So here, God, in the days of Isaiah, is predicting that the nation's going to be carried off into captivity, Jerusalem's going to be ransacked, the temple's going to be destroyed, and then there was going to, and he doesn't give the time frame, by the way, in this particular context. We're going to see some other verses about that. But that at some point in the future, he's going to raise up a guy named Cyrus, and Cyrus is going to give the command to go back and build the city and then lay the foundations of the temple. Now, notice what else. There are two different ways that he, well, there's more than two, but there are two significant terms by which he identifies Cyrus. How does he identify him in verse 28 of chapter 44? He is my what? Shepherd. Look at 45 verse 1. What does he call him? The anointed. Do you know anybody else in the Bible who is God's servant, who is his shepherd, who is the anointed? Who might that be? The Lord Jesus Christ. Isn't that fascinating? Some have said, I don't know exactly how to verify this. I looked at some different sources. And they say that the word Cyrus actually means anointed or Messiah. But you don't even need that in the name because the word right before it says, His anointed. So here God predicts that He's going to raise up a man. God isn't even living yet. And He's going to be His shepherd, His anointed, named Cyrus, and He's going to give the command to take and rebuild the city and lay the foundation of the temple. All right? Okay, so keep that in mind. Keep that in mind. Put a marker here, and we're going to have to come back to this, and I want you to go now to 2 Chronicles. I want you to go to 2 Chronicles. You need to put a marker there. This is going to be some detailed study here, all right? Is that okay if we do this morning, some detailed study? Can you move there? Can you get me a napkin from the back table? Because I need an eraser, because I'm going to have to write something up on the board here. Yes, it is. Persia is a Gentile kingdom. Okay? That's kind of interesting. Okay? Look over to 2 Chronicles, if you would. Second Chronicles. And you want to get the last chapter here in 2 Chronicles. When you read the books, let me give you a little bit of detail here, and I don't want to give too much because there's no way we can cover everything if we give too much detail. When you're reading through the Old Testament, make sure that you have, thank you, Denise. Okay. When you read through the Old Testament, you want to be sure that you have in your mind a layout of the history of the Old Testament, what's going on back there. Israel comes out of Egypt. They don't enter into the land until when you get to the book of Joshua. So Joshua takes the nation of Israel into the land, right? In the military conquest of the land. Now, so they're in the land, then you have Joshua, then you have the period of the judges where Israel just falls on their face basically. After the period of the judges, of course you have judges and then you have Ruth and so forth. After the period of the judges, who is it that winds up being Israel's first king? Anybody remember? Who is it? Okay, it's Saul. Okay? So when you're reading the books of 1 Samuel and into 2 Samuel, You're going to cover the period. Saul is their first king. How does he do, by the way? Not so good. Starts off, yes, kind of okay, but then just, okay. Who's the next king? Okay, so then David, God raises up a man after his own heart. How does David do? Pretty good. He has some couple of major issues, but David's king. And so what happens is that when you read through 1 and 2 Samuel, you're covering that history, that time frame. All right. Then, who's king after David? I'm going to run into that way too fast. Okay, who's after David? Solomon. Okay, how does Solomon do? Starts off incredibly great. In fact, in the Old Testament, there Israel has never risen to the heights of glory in the kingdom on this earth like they did under Solomon. Okay? When the apostles ask in Acts chapter number 1, when they say to the Lord, wilt thou at this time restore again the kingdom to Israel? If you restore something, what are you talking about? Bringing it back. They're saying, you're going to restore this literal physical kingdom back on this earth like we had it in the days of Solomon. See their question? But Solomon, he starts off great, but he doesn't end very well at all. Okay? So after the death of Solomon, the nation of Israel basically splits into what you call the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom. This became known as Israel. This became known as Judah. Okay? You guys need to know this. You have to know the history in the Old Testament, what's happening back there. Israel and Judah. So when you're reading the book of the Kings now, when you're reading 1 and 2 Kings, you're covering that period now. You've got 1 Kings, you've got 2 Kings, you're covering the period of the Kings now. And what happens? That northern kingdom eventually is taken off into the Assyrian captivity. And the southern kingdom, several years after that, is taken off into the Babylonian captivity. All right? That's the big picture in 30 seconds. All right? And the details are important. And at various points in Israel's history there, God is raising up these prophets to give information, to provide predictions, to provide edification and so forth. All right? So what happens is that, keep in mind again, the northern kingdom became known as Israel, became known as Samaria. In John chapter 4, when Christ goes to the Samaritans, He goes to the Samaritans because they're part of that northern kingdom. All right? When Christ says, other sheep I have which are not of this fold, that's what He's talking about. Not talking about the Gentiles. All right? And then you've got the southern kingdom that goes off into the Babylonian captivity. Isaiah is prophesying at a time prior to the northern kingdom going to the Assyrian captivity and prior to the southern kingdom going to the Babylonian captivity. Okay, so when Isaiah is prophesying, the northern kingdom is just about there. In fact, there's a transition period because Isaiah covers a number of years, so they actually are in the captivity while he's still prophesying. But the southern kingdom goes off later on. By the time you come to the Chronicles, just like the books of 1 Kings and 2 Kings cover the period of the kings, both the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom, 1 and 2 Chronicles focuses in particular on the southern kingdom. Okay? 1 and 2 Chronicles focuses on the southern kingdom. And one of the main reasons it did that, and you can figure this out, one of the main reasons it did that is because the seed line of David was part of the southern kingdom, Judah, the tribe of Judah, and in the southern kingdom is where the temple was. That's where God was going to dwell on the earth. Okay? Well, by the time you come to 2 Chronicles chapter number 36, 2 Chronicles chapter number 36, God at this point, this is the final deportation of the southern kingdom by Nebuchadnezzar to Babylon. Nebuchadnezzar and his armies to Babylon. All right? So, for example, look at verse... where can we pick up? Look at verse 14, just as an example. Moreover, all the chief of the priests and the people transgressed very much after all the abominations of the heathen and polluted the house of the Lord, which he had hallowed in Jerusalem. That's the temple right there. See that? And the Lord God of their fathers sent to them by His messengers, that would be the prophets, raising up betimes and sending, because He had compassion on His people and on His dwelling place. But they mocked the messengers of God and despised His words and misused His prophets until the wrath of the Lord arose against His people till there was no remedy. See that? All through that time, beginning way back here in the book of the Judges, when Israel, remember the book of Judges is about God raising up these various, Israel goes off to worship the gods of the Gentiles, then they're persecuted by the Gentiles, so God raises up a judge for them to rescue them back. So you had that repeated cycle back there, and then they continue to do that until there was no remedy. So God is the one who gave the nation of Israel over to the Gentiles. That's important to get that. God is the one who gave the nation of Israel over to the Gentiles, and He did it specifically because they broke His law. That was the law contract with them. The law said, if you obey me, I'll bless you. If you disobey me, I'll curse you. And then He gave them a series of five cycles of chastising. And by the time that this is all happening out here, the fifth cycle arrives. The first cycle happens back there in the period of the Judges. Then the second cycle happens in the days of Solomon when it splits. The third cycle with Elijah. The fourth with Elisha. The fifth cycle, boom, Babylon captivity. It's all laid out in the Old Testament, okay, in detail. So if you look with me again at verse 17, therefore He brought upon them the king of the Chaldees. Who is that, by the way? Who is the king of the Chaldees? Nebuchadnezzar, who slew their young men with the sword in the house of their sanctuary, had no compassion upon young men or maiden or old man or his that stooped for age. He gave them all into His hand. Who's the He in that verse? That's God did that. God gave the nation of Israel over to captivity. And He tells you why in the context here. They take all the vessels, all the vessels of the house of God and so forth. Verse 19, and they burnt the house of God, break down the wall of Jerusalem, burnt all the palaces thereof with fire, and destroyed all the goodly vessels thereof. Okay, stop there. By that point, has part of Isaiah's prophecy come to pass? And if so, which part? The destruction of the city and the temples. Exactly right. That's just one teeny tiny part of it. Isaiah prophesied that God would raise up a king from the north who could come and just ravage His people and His nation. And it comes to pass right there. Any questions on that? But yeah, the timing, right? Okay, so already part of Isaiah's prophecy is coming to pass. Well, watch. Let's keep reading. It says at verse 20 now, and them that had escaped from the sword carried He away to Babylon, where they were servants to him and his sons until the reign of the kingdom of Persia. That's an important note there. But look at the next word. To fulfill the word of the Lord by the mouth of Jeremiah until the land had enjoyed her Sabbaths. For as long as she lay desolate, she kept Sabbath to fulfill how many years? 70 years. Jeremiah, and we haven't even studied Jeremiah yet. And we'll look at it today a little bit, if we get there. Jeremiah prophesied the duration of the Babylonian captivity. And he said it would be 70 years. In fact, maybe we should look over at that verse real quick. Go with me to hold this passage here. Okay, so you should have 2 Chronicles, you should have Isaiah, and now you're going to get Jeremiah 25. Okay, say that again.
They put the book of Isaiah way later on in the scriptures in order of the layout of the book.
Yeah, okay, so the question is why does the book of Isaiah appear in the layout of the Bible where it does rather than, say, prior to Chronicles? Okay, and there's a good reason for that. A couple of things. Let me just get over Jeremiah 25 real quick here. All right, a couple of things. The Old Testament is broken up into the Law, Prophets, and Psalms. The Old Testament takes the Law, that's the first five books of the Bible. So there's the foundation upon which God, why He created the nation of Israel, and how he's going to deal with the nation of Israel. So there's the law. Okay? Then what you do is you actually go through the history books. So you go Joshua all the way to Esther. So you go Joshua, Judges, Ruth, Ezra, Nehemiah, Esther, and then you've got the Samuel, Kings, and Chronicles. So you've got the history of Israel. Then you've got the prophets. You have Job, Psalms, and Isaiah, and so forth. And so what happens is that Israel, as they're reading through the Old Testament, they see the foundation of why God created Israel and His intentions with them and the predictions that they're going to fail, because Moses predicts they're going to fail. So there's the first five books. Then they read through their history. And as they think through the history, then they're to overlay on that history the prophets. That's why it's in the order that it's in. Okay? Okay, now, go with me again, if you would, to the book of Jeremiah 25 here. Jeremiah 25, verse 8. Jeremiah 25, verse 8. Therefore, thus saith the Lord of hosts, because ye have not heard my words, behold, I will send and take all the families of the north, saith the Lord, and Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, my servant, and will bring them against this land and against the inhabitants thereof and against all those nations round about, will utterly destroy them and make them an astonishment and a hissing and perpetual desolation. Moreover, I will take from them the voice of mirth and the voice of gladness, the voice of the bridegroom, the voice of the bride, the sound of the millstone, the light of the candle, and this whole land shall be a desolation and an astonishment. And these nations shall serve the king of Babylon, how many years? There it is, 70 years. It shall come to pass when 70 years are accomplished that I will punish the king of Babylon and that nation, saith the Lord, for their iniquity in the land of the Chaldeans that will make it perpetual desolation. Okay? So, hold on to Jeremiah there. All right? God prophesies Israel through Isaiah. He says, you guys are going to go into captivity, city's going to be destroyed, temple destroyed. Well, that's exactly what happens. You come to the end of 2 Chronicles, and it's all destroyed. Jeremiah has been raised up after Isaiah and announces details about the Babylonian captivity, the duration of the Babylonian captivity, 70 years, okay? And he actually announces that there's going to be another empire that's going to come and destroy Babylon. And he tells you who it was. The Medes and the Persians. It came to pass exactly like he said. Not only that, if you'll look with me now, go back to 2 Chronicles, but keep Isaiah and keep Jeremiah. Again, I know this is kind of technical, but this is incredible. It all works together. Yes, sir. Yes, that's exactly what it is. Yes. What Scott's bringing up here is that when you read the book of Daniel, a prophet raised up later on even, God gives to Nebuchadnezzar this vision about this great colossal image whose head was of gold and chest and arms were of silver. And then brass and so forth. Who was the head of gold? Nebuchadnezzar. Who were the two arms? Media Persia. And it was the Media Persians that conquered Babylon after the 70 years. That's why Daniel, in Daniel chapter number 9, he's at about year number 68, and he's studying the book of Jeremiah, and he says, wait a minute. The Lord said by Jeremiah that the captivity would be 70 years. We're just a couple of years short from that. That's why Daniel begins to pray when he prays, and that's why the time schedule is given to Daniel when it's given to Daniel. Because God is saying to Daniel, Daniel's prayer was, okay, Lord, after the 70-year servitude, now what? And God says, here's what. So when you read Daniel chapter number 9, you've got the time schedule and so forth. It takes him all the way to the first and the second coming of Christ, the way it all works together. It's just incredible the way it. Listen, the God of the Bible predicts the future and brings it to pass 100% exactly like He said He was going to do it. Now, stay there with me in the book of 2 Chronicles. Okay. Now, you saw the reference at the end of verse 21 to the 70 years, right? So that winds up being fulfilled in terms of the Babylonians conquering Israel and keeping them under servitude. Look at the next verse now. Now in the first year of Cyrus, king of Persia. Wait a minute now. Remember, Nebuchadnezzar's vision here Nebuchadnezzar's vision, just what Scott just, and I know we didn't look at it, we just haven't had time to look at all this in this short period. But Nebuchadnezzar has this image of this great colossal image of a man and so forth, all right? This guy had too many donuts, all right? Right? There's his head, his arms and his chest, his belly and thigh, his legs and feet. That's not so bad, right? He's laying down. Because time-wise, that's what happens. The time-wise, that's a timeline there. You got Babylon. You got Media, Persia. You've got Greece. And then, of course, you had Rome. But then out here, you've got the kingdom of the Antichrist, the ten toes. When Nebuchadnezzar, when God gave the nation of Israel, specifically the southern kingdom, to Babylon, that started in human history, that started what's called the times of the Gentiles. Okay? In human history, that started what's called the times of the Gentiles. When God created the nation of Israel, brought them out of Egypt, they were His nation on the earth. And up until that time, when He gave them over to Nebuchadnezzar, He never allowed any one nation to gain supremacy and dominance over His nation and His land and His temple. Until that event. And I know I asked you to, you got 2 Chronicles there, go back to Jeremiah. This time look over to Jeremiah chapter 29. Actually, it's Jeremiah 27. Jeremiah 27. Jeremiah 27, verse 1. It says, in the beginning of the reign of Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah, king of Judah. Okay, that's the southern kingdom. Okay? Came the word of the Lord to Jeremiah from the Lord, saying, thus saith the Lord to me, make thee bonds and yokes and put them upon thy neck. Send them to the king of Edom, king of Moab, king of the Ammonites, king of Tyrus, king of Zidon, by the hand of the messengers which come to Jerusalem, unto Zedekiah, king of Judah. And command them to say unto their masters, thus saith the Lord of hosts, the king of Israel, thus shall you say unto your masters, I made the earth and man and beasts that are upon the ground, by my great power, by my outstretched arm, and have given it unto whom it seemed meet unto me. And what's the next word there? The word now. That means you start something right there. That verse says, and now have I given all these lands unto the hand of Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, my servant. That's the verse right there. If you need to point to when the times of the Gentiles began, that's when they start right there. God takes and He gives the Edomites, the Moabites, the Ammonites, the Tyrus, the Zidonians, and Israel. He gives all the nations to Nebuchadnezzar. That's why Nebuchadnezzar had the military victory that he did, because God did it. So when Daniel interprets the image to Nebuchadnezzar, he says to Nebuchadnezzar that the God of heaven gave this to you, that God's the one who made you the head of gold. But Jeremiah also prophesies Babylon would rule over Israel for 70 years. And then Media Persia. Okay? So now go back. You can let go of Jeremiah there. Go back to 2 Chronicles. 2 Chronicles chapter 36. So watch verse 22. Now in the first year of who? Cyrus, king of Persia. So where are you in Daniel's, in Nebuchadnezzar's vision? The head's been cut off. Been decapitated. Babylon's done. He got conquered, right? Media Persia in the first year of his reign. Look at these verses. Now in the first year of who? Wait a minute. Didn't we read in Isaiah a couple of hundred years before this guy ever was born that God was going to raise up a guy by the name of Cyrus who was going to perform His will, and His will was going to be to command to rebuild the city and lay the foundations of the temple. So look what it says. Now in the first year of Cyrus, king of Persia, that the word of the Lord spoken by the mouth of Jeremiah the prophet. Notice it says spoken. Isaiah wrote it down. Jeremiah spoke it, as well as Jeremiah wrote other things down. It says that the word of the Lord spoken by the mouth of Jeremiah the prophet, Jeremiah, might be accomplished. The Lord stirred up the spirit of Cyrus, king of Persia, that he made a proclamation throughout all his kingdom and put it also in writing, saying, thus saith Cyrus, king of Persia, all the kingdoms of the earth hath the Lord God of heaven given to me. Now, remember, when he says all the kingdoms of the earth has the Lord given to me, remember, God had given all the kingdoms of the earth to Nebuchadnezzar as part of the chastening hand against Israel. But now the 70-year servitude's over with. So who did God predict, i.e. the prophet Daniel, through the prophet Daniel, through the vision given to Nebuchadnezzar, who did God predict the next empire would be? Media-Persia. There they are. Cyrus understands that. He says, listen, the reason I got this power, the reason I had this military victory is because the God of heaven, the Lord God of heaven, gave that to me. Isn't that fascinating? This guy's a king of a Gentile empire. And he says this, verse 23, thus saith Cyrus, king of Persia, all the kingdoms of the earth hath the Lord God of heaven given me. And he hath charged me to build him an house in Jerusalem, which is in Judah. Who was there among you of all his people? The Lord his God be with him and let him go up. He lets Israel go. Just like Isaiah wrote down and just like Jeremiah prophesied. What's the very next book in the Bible? What is it? It's right there in the book of Ezra. And look how Ezra starts. Now in the first year of Cyrus, king of Persia, that the word of the Lord by the mouth of Jeremiah the prophet might be fulfilled, the Lord stirred up the spirit of Cyrus, king of Persia, that he made a proclamation throughout all his kingdom and put it also in writing, saying, thus saith Cyrus, king of Persia, the Lord God of heaven hath given me all the kingdoms of the earth, and he hath charged me to build him an house at Jerusalem, which is in Judah. It begins the exact way Chronicles ends, because that's the next part of the story here. So God, in the book of Isaiah, hold Chronicle and Ezra there. Please hold that there and go back to Isaiah quickly. And I know we're racing the clock at this point, and I have one other really important point I have to get across here, okay? So I'm racing the clock already. Look at this. Go back to Isaiah chapter number 44. He had Isaiah prophesy about a guy that wasn't even born yet. And he gives the name of the guy. And he tells exactly what the guy's going to do. And that guy is going to give the command to go back and build the city and lay the foundations of the temple and so forth. And notice, therefore, in Isaiah chapter 45, verse 1, thus saith the Lord to his anointed, to Cyrus. You understand, he's anointed in the sense of God set him up. God raised him up. He says, thus saith the Lord to his anointed, to Cyrus, whose right hand I have holden to subdue nations. So now you know why he had that military victory, right? Before him. I will loose the loins of kings, to open door for him the two-leaved gates, the gate shall not be shut. I will go before thee and make the crooked places straight. I will break in pieces the gates of brass and cut in sunder the bars of iron. I will give thee the treasures of darkness and the hidden riches of secret places, that thou mayest know that I, the Lord, which call thee by thy name, I am the God, am the God of Israel. Now, you know, Cyrus goes in and has this unbelievable military victory over the greatest empire on the earth at the time, Babylon. How come he was so successful? That's why. It's because God opened before him the two-leaf gates. God is the one that raised him up to power. God is the one that gave him the victory over Nebuchadnezzar. Now, do you know who Cyrus is? Well, yeah, he's the king of Persia. Who did he come from? Do you know what happens in the book of Esther? Do you know what happens in the book of Esther? You go Ezra, Nehemiah, and in the book of Esther. Real quickly. In the book of Esther, King Ahasuerus, if you look over to Esther chapter 1, verse 1, now it came to pass in the days of Ahasuerus, This is Ahasuerus' reign from India even unto Ethiopia over 107 and 20 provinces. King Ahasuerus, he's a Gentile king. And in the days of Esther, there is this plot by the guy who's second in command under Ahasuerus. This guy's Haman is his name. He comes up with this plot to absolutely annihilate all the Jews. He is specifically said to be the enemy of the Jews. And he comes up with this plan to annihilate the Jews. And the king signs off on it. And what happens, there's another important player in the book of Esther. There's actually two more. There's Mordecai and there's Esther. Mordecai is the uncle of Esther. Mordecai and Esther are Jews. So here you've got this setting where these Gentiles have amassed all their power and they've received government authority to slay all the Jews. The second in command is going to give the command, and the king signs off on it. Esther, who's a Jew, because of a strange set of circumstances, becomes queen. Hears of the plan. Mordecai, her uncle, tells her, you need to go talk to the king. Because you're not going to escape this king's decree just because you're the queen. You're still a Jew and he's going to kill you too. So she goes in, talks to the queen, and you have to read the story. It's an incredible story. And the whole table's turned. Where Israel's enemy is destroyed. He's hung on the very gallows that he wanted to hang Mordecai on. And now the queen, Esther, secures the favor of the king, Ahasuerus, to allow the Jews to defend themselves. And he sends that decree out. So, rather than the Jews being destroyed and slaughtered and annihilated, the Jews are allowed to defend themselves. And the day comes in which they're supposed to be destroyed, and they win a great victory. And it says, if you look over to chapter 8, look over to chapter 8 of Esther, chapter 8, verse 17, the very last sentence. Very last sentence. And many of the people of the land became what? Jews, for fear of the Jews fell upon them. Great turning of the tide. Great turning. See that? And so now what happens? Mordecai, the uncle of Esther, is raised to the second in command underneath Ahasuerus. So here you've got Ahasuerus as a Gentile king. You've got Esther, who is a Jewish queen, married to Ahasuerus. And you've got Mordecai, who is his second in command and chief counsel to the king. Now, according to a couple of interesting sources, you know who Cyrus is? Cyrus is the son of Esther and Ahasuerus. You go, wait a minute. Can this be? Could there have come out of this great plot to destroy and annihilate Israel by the enemy of the Jews? The table gets turned. God takes the wise in their own craftiness. And then in the very house of the king of the land, the relationship between Ahasuerus and Esther, the Jewish queen, they produce a son. Esther and Mordecai teach that son. I wonder what they might have taught this guy. When he says over in 2 Chronicles and Ezra chapter number 1, he says, listen, the Lord commanded me to do this. How did he know that was true? Because he read the verses. That's how he knew it. And this whole thing was predicted by Isaiah at least 200 years before it ever came to pass. The very details. Not just by Isaiah, but Jeremiah too. It sounds to me like the God who predicted that probably was able to bring the details to pass. Isn't that incredible? You go, whoa. And that's just a teeny tiny fraction of the prophecies he's predicted. There's that greater shepherd, that greater son, that greater anointed, the Lord Jesus Christ, both His first coming and His second coming. His second coming hasn't happened yet, but if His first coming was literal, you probably can figure out His second coming is going to be literal too, right? So anyway, we're out of time. I would say, do you have any questions? I'm sure you do, but we're out of time. We have to start here in about 10 minutes. Let's take a break and we'll start again.